The Strand Gamers present How We Roll, the show that asks the difficult and largely pointless questions about gamers, their games, and the community that surrounds them. Okay, we are on with the inaugural edition of How We Roll, a podcast where we talk way too much about gaming and shit that is trivial to people who are actually adults.
Hey, we're actually adults.
Are we, though?
You have a small business.
I do. But as soon as I'm done doing this, I'm going to go play Batman video games. So, I don't know where that counts on the scale. Anyway, as you can hear, I am joined today by Matt, who you might recognize from Inquisition of Blood.
Hi.
Because I want to talk about player characters who have goals that do not mesh or are directly antagonistic towards the rest of the party. And if you've listened to Inquisition of Blood, you know that Matt sometimes falls into that category.
I disagree.
Do you?
No. I'm being coy.
Okay. Okay, then. Well, Matt, you obviously feel that it is acceptable to play characters who are not in on the team spirit, necessarily. And I agree with you there, but I feel like there are some people who don't. We think that it's an absolute necessity that everyone in the party be working towards the same goal.
I don't really understand that mentality.
Why not?
Because it just seems very unrealistic. It makes the characters very unbelievable to be like, hey, I just met you and this is crazy, but let's do whatever. Like, I'm gonna put my life on the line for this personal goal that means something to you, but not to me.
I can definitely see that, but I think that's a separate thing. Like, the personal involvement in the quest, like, a good GM can work in people's personal involvements while keeping them all pulling towards the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It does limit the scope of characters you can have, though.
How so?
Well, obviously, using Inquisition of Blood as an example, you know, we need to have people who are either anti-magic or very strongly in favor of responsible use of magic. But I think a character like you did with Elijah is interesting. Someone who's all for, you know, using magic to solve every single problem in his life. And half the time creating more problems in the process.
Almost never did he create more problems.
Really?
Without at least solving one in the process.
Yeah, but if you solve one problem and create two, is that a victory?
I wasn't thinking of solving one and making two, because then it's a net loss.
Maybe if you're breaking things down into smaller problems.
Oh, then they're easier to take care of a piece at a time. So that's technically helping.
I do have one of my favorite experiences with this is the first time I ever played Burning Wheel. I was in a group where we were all playing human bandits. And my character was like the leader of this bandit clan, and one of the other players was playing his second-in-command, whose beliefs revolved around offing the leader and becoming the new leader of the bandits. So obviously several times in this campaign, his character tried to discreetly kill mine. We were in direct and vile opposition, but I think because we talked about it beforehand, like, this came up in character planning, and he asked you, would it be cool if I make my character someone who wants yours dead? And I decided, yes, that's amazing. And as a result, I almost made my character sort of a Mr. Magoo type who is completely unaware of the danger he was in, but somehow blunders through alive nonetheless. Then it created this really interesting dynamic where, you know, our primary antagonist was within the party.
It seems like that story-wise is very interesting, but it's hard to, hard to make it happen unless you're both working cooperatively toward it. I mean, obviously in character they're conflicting, but out of character you need to be coordinated so that, for example, a failed test from one of them trying to do something can fail in a way that drives the story in an interesting way rather than just this attempt to kill someone fizzled out and that's it.
Yeah. It's an interesting point you bring up that kind of the best way to do characters who are antagonistic to each other is with people that you know really well.
Mm-hmm.
I would not sit down and try to do it with a group of strangers or like go to a pickup game at a game store and go, my character is secretly going to backstab you all. Because that just makes you a dick.
Yeah.
But if you approach it with the attitude that you're trying to tell a story here, like if you want to tell a story like Game of Thrones or some sort of court intrigue and backstabbing, that's awesome, but everybody needs to be on the same page there.
Yes.
If you want to be classic good versus evil, and one person wants to steal everyone's stuff and slit their throats in their sleep, not so well.
Right. But there's not really anything driving them to be part of the story then, if that's their motivation. Because there's some, like, undefinable quality about all of the characters that brings them together. And out of character, that quality is the fact that they're played by players who are part of this game. But in character, it has to manifest as something else, like some Destiny-style goal.
Right. And I think the easiest way to do it would be to have characters who want the same things for different reasons. Like,
yes.
Without giving away too many spoilers for Inquisition of Blood for people who haven't listened to it, Elijah frequently wants the exact same thing or similar things to the rest of the party. He's just striving for a different goal.
Or the way of doing something is different. And the way of doing something might even be counter to the idea of like what they're trying to accomplish, but it still gets the same end result. Like, I don't want to do spoilers, like you said, but using magic irresponsibly to bring down an irresponsible wizard.
Right. And it provides a nice mirror to a character like Martin, who wants to do everything the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's a classic configuration right there. The shadowy reflection, the doppelganger. That you provide contrast. It's just that normally that person is, well, often a villain.
Yeah.
Like, kind of a Indiana Jones thing. Where, I can't even remember the dude's name.
Neither can I.
The evil archaeologist dude, yeah. Who goes on all these adventures and has the same sort of skills and knowledge and collects things up, but his end goal is to profit himself.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there's no reason you couldn't tell an Indiana Jones story where they team up, collect everything together, you know, use their skills, And then the conflict comes at the end.
Right.
I do have a counter example to myself of a time when I tried player characters as adversaries and it turned out horribly.
Oh, I want to hear about this.
Yeah. I was running a Pathfinder Kingmaker game, separate from the one that has been recorded on the site. I decided I needed to run another game, and it seemed like an easy thing to run because I was already running one of them. Except this one, to make it a little differently, I upgraded it to sort of a Wild West thing. So characters were gunslingers, you know, exploring the new land, going out west.
Oh, that sounds sweet. We should have done that for our second campaign.
It was cool. But one of the problems we ran into was, being old West timey, we got a lot of characters who were unscrupulous or otherwise scumbags. And there was a lot of tension between them. And what ended up happening was one of the characters rather organically ended up just ditching the rest of the party in the middle of the night. And I mean, it ended up, it was completely meshing with the story as it was happening. But
it kind of works against the idea of playing together as a group playing a pen and paper RPG together. Yeah.
What ended up happening was that character went over to the enemy, like the primary antagonist of that book. If you've read, if you're familiar with Kingmaker, the Stag Lord. She went to the Stag Lord and basically revealed all the party's secrets and the best way to go about killing them. Which, in theory, could be cool. And that player ended up introducing a new character to work within the party. But that sort of lingering knowledge remained, and it just ended up being a story stopper. Because as a player and a character in that group, she knew exactly how to take them down. So the players being good role players, even though they had an inkling this was happening, ended up walking into this ambush and just all getting butchered. Which is a conclusion to the story, but not a very satisfying one. Just being fed into the wood chipper.
Well, something to consider in the case of betrayal is that there may be clues here and there that this is going on. Like, maybe somehow one of the other characters in the party could have known and arranged for some other way out of this, or together they could have arranged for some other way out of the situation.
Yeah. I have no question that I could have handled it better than I did. But I'm a pretty experienced GM, and I think it just goes to show that how treacherous it can be when you start introducing that stuff, players as antagonists. And you're definitely shortening the shelf life of your campaign. When you have a player character who is working either obliquely or in direct opposition to the party, that character is not going to last long. Period. I mean, it might be a cool 5 to 20 sessions, but in the long term, one of them has to win.
Yeah, because otherwise nobody's ever accomplishing anything.
Right. And I mean, you don't want it to be like the fucking Mumra thing. It's like, I'll get the Thundercats next time. You know, because eventually it just becomes a joke.
Yeah.
Like, you've never succeeded at anything, and then the person playing that character just feels like shit. Like, I'm the group punching bag.
Yeah. I'm surprised that neither Solomon nor Elijah have fallen into that.
I think it's because of your dedication to going for for your goals. Like, you will pull the trigger every time. You can be relied upon to go for it. Even when the stakes are life and death. I think the group punching bag comes in when the player is too timid or just afraid to completely betray the party. Or, sorry, go on.
No, I was just acknowledging that makes sense.
Or it could be a case where, you know, gamers have a hard time excluding people. I think as a group, we will game with or associate with people who are unpleasant in general, just to avoid being, you know, excluders or bullies.
Right.
We largely know what that's like, and it's not a good feeling. Mm-hmm. So players may tolerate someone who's working against them when in character they really shouldn't. Just because in the metagame, they don't want to feel like they're picking on someone.
Right.
Oh, thought of it. Go on.
I don't really think that particular reason, maybe that's been the reason that the rest of the party hasn't killed off Elijah, but I don't think that motivated me to pull any punches with him.
Yeah, I don't think it's the case for Elijah. I think it's a case where... I think Elijah is an example of doing it right. Because everybody knows that it's in service to a story. It's not you going rogue and fucking things up because you're bored or... You know, you're just a naturally destructive person. It's in service to a larger story and everyone is enjoying seeing how that story unfolds. Even if it could hinder their own progress.
Mm-hmm. You said you had another example?
I did. I just thought of... I can't remember if you were around for this one. John ran a Star Wars campaign.
I was not.
Okay. It was essentially a retelling of the prequel movies.
Oh boy.
To make them not terrible. And I was playing the Anakin Skywalker role, and another character, we had another player playing Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I mm-hmm. think that was my favorite ever PCS antagonist, because it was simmering below the surface. It was like a 3-month campaign. That it just simmered right below the surface, that everyone at the table knew at the end of the campaign, one of these two guys is going to have to, they're going to fight each other, and odds are one of them's going to kill the other. Because that's just what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows the end game of that story. But on the surface, it's all smiles and friendship. I'm trying to think of a way that would work in a game where you don't know the end ahead of time, though. I mean, you can always work in prophecies and shit, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure how to really... I mean, unless you have a system like Burning Wheel where everything is very character, like, very character goal-oriented... and you have some underlying long-term goal that will only be achieved by, you know, an eventual switching of sides. I don't see any way for that to really manifest itself in a story that's not already predetermined that someone's going to eventually be the antagonist.
Right. I think system makes a huge difference in, you know, that group dynamic, because people play Dungeons and Dragons largely to win. I mean, I know there's some people telling grand Lord of the Rings style epics, but I would say in general, people play D&D to kick the shit out of monsters and, you know, punch evil in the face.
Which is a fine goal.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I play D&D. It's nice. But that is not the system to bust out your guy who's plotting in secret against the rest of the party. Because instead of contributing something interesting to the story, you're just the guy going around telling the other team who's not wearing their cup.
What a jerk.
Yeah, it's... Really, the more sort of story-oriented the system. Like, I mean, we love Burning Wheel, which is why we play it all the damn time. And that's a system well-suited to... We sit down at character creation and go, yeah, 50 sessions down the line, my character's going to turn on you.
Mm-hmm.
And that
I think this is another example from our group to talk about how systems make a difference. The Star Wars game and how Wook and Tiku were basically entirely differently motivated from the other members of the group. It just got very stale because there wasn't any, like, we didn't really care about the story. It was just blasting stormtroopers.
Right. Yeah, I think that schism was a big part of the downfall of that game. That half the group seemed like it was playing for the story, and the other half of the group was playing to punch evil in the face. Like, they're both acceptable reasons to game. Just in this campaign, it didn't mesh at all. So we wound up spending a lot of time where you guys would split up and really be sabotaging each other.
Mm-hmm.
That game had problems.
It did. The story also was not incredibly compelling.
No. I mean, I could riff on Dawn of Defiance and the Adventure Path all day long, but you know what? I picked it. We tried it, and it didn't work. For various reasons involving both the adventure, the system, the group dynamic, everything. So...
Mm-hmm. I'm not mad.
Okay. I'm not mad either. We had a good time while it lasted, and mm-hmm. then it stopped. It's always disappointing to me to, I guess, start a campaign and start broadcasting it to people, and then stop it. Because it's one thing with a group of your friends where you can go, you know, yeah, this isn't working anymore, and stop. But it's another thing when you're putting on a show. It's like right. If halfway through, you know, the first season of Heroes, they're like, yeah, we're not having fun making this anymore, so yeah, we're done. Although that might have been doing everyone a favor.
I haven't seen Heroes.
Really? You should watch the first season and then no other seasons.
Does it get stupid?
It does. It gets stupid really fast. Went off on a weird tangent there. There's some other things I want to ask you about.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I just need to remember what they are.
Are they about D&D back in the day?
I could always ask you about D&D back in the day. I'm trying to remember times related to group dynamic. I do remember...
Real Lele's shot your character with an arrow reliably every time.
Yes. That is a thing that happened. I can't remember why, though.
It was multiple occasions, and I can't remember the reasons either.
Yeah, I think it boiled down to we were teenagers and petty conflict coupled with emotional immaturity.
Yes.
Which is exactly the wrong way to handle an antagonistic relationship at a game.
That's true.
I think that's the root of a lot of people's aversion to it as well. Like, It boils down to when you started gaming. And it's like, I don't know how to deal with this person in reality. Or, I'm going through puberty and can't handle conflict appropriately. Or, this guy got bored and massacred the rest of the party. Like, there's so many awful examples. But I think when it works, it's fantastic, even for just a short time.
Yeah.
I mentioned Game of Thrones. Like, you know, that game, if Game of Thrones was being played around a table, people would be betraying each other, backstabbing, scheming against each other, selling secrets, fucking a lot. But it'd be, like, it would have nothing resembling the normal group dynamic we find in tabletop RPGs.
Right.
But it's still awesome. For anyone who's been listening to For House and Clan, Piers, my character, had sort of a weird arc in that where he was always working towards really the betterment of majority of the clan, but his way of going about it was always secret, and sometimes he would sell out information about other members of the clan in the goal of advancing themselves, but it's sort of, are you comfortable with other people making the decision what's best for you? And turns out they weren't. But that said, the character didn't last very long, but it was some of the greatest sessions.
Related to that adversity, or?
Yes. It ended up being a case where where basically he was just too different. He went rogue too often. And it came back to bite him.
Uh-huh.
People who listen to Kingmaker know that we had a lot of executions and inter-party conflict. And I don't want to talk bad about my baby, but I think in a lot of cases those were wrong. Like, those were cases of the group just didn't communicate enough. It wasn't in service to the story. It was just one person wanted to accomplish this goal, got angry no one was following them, and went rogue.
I think that separation between your goals for the character out of character and the in-character's goals is important to that.
Absolutely. And I think sort of critical to that is sharing your goals for the character with the rest of the group.
Right. Because, I mean, we all make public our goals for the character, like the character's goals, like in Burning Wheel, we're sharing our beliefs. But just because the character has this belief doesn't mean that's what we want. That's the direction we want the character to go, necessarily.
Right. I think sometimes gamers get too obsessed with the reveal. Like, you're going to go 20 sessions in, like, haha, I was working for the big bad all along. Aww. And it never works out how you hope. Like, yeah. You never get the gasp, suddenly it all makes sense moment that a good reveal has. At best, it's like, oh. And at worst, it's like, well, that's stupid. But if you let people know up front, like, yeah, your characters don't know it, but this guy's a double agent, then it just simmers. Then it colors everything that happens to that character. It becomes a driving motivation. Instead of trying to craft an interesting character with half of him kept secret.
Uh-huh. I think, again, that comes back to keeping in character and out of character knowledge like strictly separated, because I mean nobody is going to consciously do it, be like, well, that he's going to betray me, so I'm going to make sure to watch him in particular, but there's not really any reason to. They might contrive some reason that they would have to be on their guard with this person, even if it's not a legitimate reason.
Right, and I've definitely seen that happen. I think it comes down to, if you want to have that sort of sophisticated, antagonistic intergroup storytelling, it needs to be with a group you know well, trust, and can communicate with.
And cooperate with. Because, like, if someone is going to betray someone else and they have this knowledge that they're, like, surreptitiously acting on, you know, contriving reasons, it's really, do they want to be involved in this like, antagonistic story? Maybe they do, but they want to make sure they win.
Right.
Like, they want their version of the story to win at the end.
Yeah, I got you. Like, are we playing to tell an interesting story, or are we playing to win? Whatever form winning takes for you is just really not what the game's about.
Right.
I mean, if you're telling a story-driven game, all the characters in that story cannot win.
But I think all the players can.
Usually. But sometimes it's interesting when they don't. Which might happen in the next Inquisition of Blood.
I think we'll be alright.
Okay. I don't know. I legitimately don't know. And that's what's interesting to me.
Well, you're the great decider. If you don't know, you better ask somebody.
I'm really not the great decider, man. I come up with challenges and see if you guys can overcome them. And I think one of my favorite things as a GM is having unknown elements, like someone within the party who's working, you know, in opposition to them. Because then we have my challenges, the challenges they prevent, and sometimes they mingle together in some sort of bizarre hybrid.
Right, because sometimes there are ways that, like, you might have a plan for what we're going to do generally, and you're sort of anticipating different ways it could turn out, but you can't imagine, like, there's just a lot of different ways things can go if people are working against one another. I mean, if you want to stick together, there's really only one way you can stick together, but I don't know. I think that, like, I am not sure how to go about phrasing this without giving spoilers for, like, this particular instance.
The oppositions that a GM throws at the party can become tools for an antagonistic character within the party.
Yes, that's exactly. That captures the sentiment I'm trying to say very well.
And really, there's no way for anyone to predict that. Like, it's something that flows very organically at the table, and is usually really cool.
Right, because it's a huge swing in, like, the balance of power. Like, these five guys up against this, you know, insurmountable odds or whatever. And then suddenly it's these four guys against this force plus one. It makes, if the four can, you know, manage some way to get through the situation, it's a bigger victory for them.
Right, it definitely raises the stakes. Especially because I think in an RPG, like, subconsciously, a lot of times the players know that the GM is giving them challenges they can overcome.
Right.
Because it's not my goal to win, obviously.
Right, because if you wanted to just win, you could be like, well, there's 100,000 gibberlings, and they overrun your camp.
Right. So, I mean, it's almost like you don't think about it subconsciously, and it's obviously my goal to make you guys feel like your characters are in genuine danger, and characters can and have died in my games. But generally, I don't put in anything that's completely beyond your reach, and everybody knows that. But when an antagonistic player character gets involved, it's almost like the safety's off.
Yeah.
They don't have those same misgivings.
Right. Because they can't really anticipate what else the characters they're betraying will have to put up with. So they can't really gauge their, you know, the amount of force they're using, not necessarily physical force, but like how hard they're pushing for something. They can't weigh that against whether the characters will be able to handle it.
Yeah,
exactly. The same way that you can.
Yeah, it's...
And also, they like, not being the GM, they have really no incentive to hold back. If, you know, pulling punches is going to make them less likely to effectively pursue their goal, then why would they?
Right. I mean, they're trying to tell the story their way. I mean, hopefully they are flexible on that point. Like, if it doesn't go their way, they can look back and go, well, at least we told an interesting story.
Right.
Even if it was over the smoking remains of my character. I look forward to what we're doing next. I guess that's what it all comes down to. Final point. Make sure what you're doing is fun for everyone in the group. I think that there is definitely a place for player characters working against the larger goals, but it needs to be something that the whole group is aware of and cool with.
Right, because a character that is just erratically working against the other characters isn't fun, and it's not interesting.
Right. It might be fun for that person. I've definitely met people who are into that sort of thing. I say it like they're into necrophilia, but it's a communal activity, and it needs to be fun for everybody. Mm-hmm. Period. The end. I think I've said all that I have to say on that topic.
Necrophilia or antagonistic characters?
Antagonistic characters. If we wanted to get into necrophilia, this podcast would be 4 hours long.
Oh, don't get Nick started on necrophilia.
Someday these recordings are going to be in an FBI evidence locker.
I can't wait.
Okay. Thank you for joining us on our first ever How We Roll. Hopefully it was at least marginally entertaining, and we can continue talking far too much about things that are trivial. Thanks to Matt, our first guest. I'll try not to kill his character when we play Inquisition of Blood tomorrow, but no promises.
Well, I appreciate that. And thank you for inviting me to talk about trivial things.